On a Friday, it is Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're part of the roundtable at 800-642-1234. First up, news that bookended our week. Former FBI Director James Comey. The latest is 15 pages of redacted and declassified memos that were sent to Congress from the Justice Department last night. They detail a series of phone calls and encounters between President Trump and James Comey in the months leading up to Comey's firing. The president responded in a tweet hours ago, James Comey memos just out and show clearly that there was no collusion and no obstruction. Also, he leaked classified information. Wow, will the witch hunt continue? End quote. Meanwhile, Comey is on a book tour making the rounds with press after the release of his memoir on Tuesday. He started with ABC News. Here he is Sunday night with George Stephanopoulos.
You say it's a dangerous time in our country.
I think it is, and I chose those words carefully. I was worried when I chose the word dangerous first. I thought, is that an overstatement? And I don't think it is.
Why not?
I worry that the norms at the center of this country, we can fight as Americans about guns or taxes or immigration, and we always have, but what we have in common is a set of norms, most importantly, the truth. And if we lose that, if we lose tethering of our leaders to that truth, what are we?
Let's get going with Tony Palmieri, a communication studies professor at UW Oshkosh. He blogs at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. Hi, Tony. Welcome back.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. And Michelle Litchens is here as well. She is a small business owner from Burlington and a former Republican state representative. Michelle, welcome back to you.
Good morning, Kate. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
All right. These redacted, unclassified memos written by then FBI Director James Comey describing private conversations with President Trump. Among them is in which Comey says the president asked him to end an investigation into his former national security advisor, Michael Flynn. And according to the Post, the memos have no information that had not already been discussed publicly by Comey in congressional testimony or in his memoir and the string of interviews he's done. So, Michelle, let's start with you. What do you make of this situation involving these memos and Comey's critiques of the president?
You know, I don't make much of the memos. Again, there really wasn't any new information that we weren't aware of before the memos came out. There was no smoking gun. We just learned that he really didn't care for President Trump. He didn't care for his methods. He doesn't care for him personally. And I think we all kind of knew that. He just kind of reiterated it over and over and over again in the memos. I was interested to read today that The Hill said that Comey is considering a movie deal. I mean, you kind of wonder where this is going to end with him right now with his book tour and all. But, you know, the memos really were nothing, although we've kind of been anticipating some more information we didn't know about. But we certainly didn't learn anything new.
Well, Tony Palmieri, we can see from the memoir that Comey can write in rich detail. What do you make of what's going on here with Comey and Trump?
Well, for the president to tweet that somehow the memos prove that there's no obstruction or collusion, I think for anyone who's been watching since day one, the president has been obstructing openly, bullying, intimidating, and, you know, in the memo, we now have the confirmation that he did ask Comey to suspend an investigation of Flynn. I mean, that to me sounds like an active attempt to obstruct an investigation. One other thing we learned in the memos that I think is very, very disturbing, where apparently you had the president openly advocating for jailing of journalists in order to find out who leakers were. So for those people, myself included, who were concerned that Donald Trump would be the worst president in history for the press, for the free press, I should say, you know, we now have more confirmation for that.
So, Tony, what do you think this all means for the ongoing Russia investigation?
Well, you know, Mr. Comey's timing is kind of odd because obviously the special counsel, Mr. Mueller, it looks like he's in the thick of this investigation. So I don't know if this was the best timing to make a media spectacle out of these issues. But, you know, I do think that investigation will continue to dog the administration really until 2020. And to me, it looks like there is something there. You know, I do think that Mueller will find a pattern of obstruction, and the issue will be whether the Congress has the courage or integrity to deal with that. What will the Congress do when Mueller comes out with what I predict will be a very, very damning report in the end?
I want to ask both of you this. Michelle, you first. Do you think what we have seen, the revelations that Comey has published, whether it be in his memo, whether it be in his press interview rounds, whether it be in these 15 pages of memos, will it matter come November? Will voters take this information to the polls? And what will happen there?
You know, I don't believe most voters out there tie your local Republicans to Donald Trump. I really don't see them. Most local Republicans are not out there defending the president on a regular basis. We all know the president's obnoxious. He's a narcissist. He doesn't use tact. He attacks people on Twitter. I'm certainly not going to defend his behavior at all. But I don't necessarily believe that his behavior is going to reflect on local Republicans around at least the state of Wisconsin. So I just don't think that we are going to see the blue wave that they continue to talk about happening maybe as extensively as they think. We obviously know, as happens every time that a party has the White House, that people will lose seats with that party. That's just the way that it goes. So we're anticipating some loss, but I don't think it's going to be to the extent that some people think it might be.
Tony, how about you? Will it make a difference, make an impact?
Yeah, I kind of disagree with Michelle here. I do think that the Republicans statewide are associated with Donald Trump in the sense that they are perceived as enablers, with Paul Ryan, who, of course, is leaving the Congress, being the worst example of that, someone who just won't stand up to Donald Trump. You know, remember, Donald Trump did not win the Republican primary in Wisconsin. So he really was not that popular here among Republicans to begin with. You know, so what that says to me is that Republican voters and independents really wanted to see Republican elected officials stand up to the president. And they really have not done that. I mean, I think Ron Johnson came out the other day and said that he was, you know, perhaps not going to support Donald Trump in 2020 if he runs for re-election. You know, I think from Senator Johnson, that might be an attempt to help out his friends that are running for election this year. But I do think that the Republicans in general are going to be hurt by their association with the president just for not standing up to him strongly enough.
So, Michelle, what are you watching for here as the Russia probe unfolds, as more information comes out from the FBI en route to the Justice Department?
Well, quite honestly, I'm not watching for anything anymore. I think that if there was definitive information that Donald Trump did something illegal and wrong, we would know it by now. I just think they continue to try to dig and dig and dig and try to find something that they can use against President Trump. Again, I am not a fan of his. I don't appreciate the methods that he uses to communicate. But I don't think they're going to find any illegal activities when it comes to any collusion with Russia. I mean, my goodness, if there was anything, I think it would have come out in these memos now. So, and again, you are going to hear Democrats saying we need to get rid of this president, we need to impeach him, and maybe if the Democrats take over Congress, they will. But Donald Trump is not going anywhere, and I think that's just something we have to understand. He's not going anywhere.
Tony, I would seem to think that you are probably watching for the final reports from the Mueller probe. Is that what you're angling for here?
Yeah, I mean, all the signs are that whatever final report there is going to be extremely damning. And, you know, just look at what has happened in special elections and other races around the country. We've got Democrats that are winning in historically red districts and states like Alabama. We have the governor of Wisconsin, Governor Walker, that actively tried to prevent special elections from taking place. All right? I mean, citizens had to take him to court to get him to do his job. I think because the governor knows that Democrats have a very good chance of winning special elections in districts that have been, at least for the last few decades, solidly Republican. So, yeah, I mean, I think what's going on with the president, including this investigation, is really impacting politics at the local level, and that includes in our state of Wisconsin.
Let's bring in Nate with a perspective in Milwaukee. Nate, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I thought an interesting part of this was the Wisconsin connection in the form of Vince Priebus, and that he was actually mentioned in the memos, and he reportedly asked the FBI to publicly dismiss media reports about contacts between Trump officials and Russians. And I have to wonder if Mr. Priebus was involved in inappropriate things himself.
Nate, thanks for the call. Michelle, any response there?
I don't believe Reince Priebus did anything illegal, and I'm sure that he's already been investigated. I'm sure he's had many conversations with not only the FBI, but other agencies. So I guess I'm just not too concerned about all of this. I know it's hard for Democrats to let go of some of these things. That I know that they don't like Donald Trump. I know they don't like his administration, the way that he handles himself. But I just don't see anyone going to jail over any of these issues.
Michelle Litchens is a small business owner from Burlington, former Republican state representative here on Week in Review, along with Tony Palmieri, a communication studies professor at UW Oshkosh, blogging at Tony Palmieri's Media Rants. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Should U.S. leaders talk with North Korea? Are you okay if it happens in secret, or should they be more open about their plans? Later in the hour, what do you think is the legacy of Vel Phillips? What was her impact as she passed away this week? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Moving on, over the weekend, President Trump's ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, announced the administration would place sanctions on Russian companies found to be helping Syria's chemical weapons program. Let's hear what Haley had to say.
You will see that Russian sanctions will be coming down. Secretary Mnuchin will be announcing those on Monday if he hasn't already. And they will go directly to any sort of companies that were dealing with equipment related to Assad and chemical weapons use. And so I think everyone is going to feel it at this point. I think everyone knows that we sent a strong message, and our hope is that they listen to it.
So this came after the U.S. recently launched an airstrike against Syria following the alleged chemical attack there. It was later announced that the Trump administration hadn't approved additional measures. One thing that's garnered a lot of attention here is what the administration has said and what Nikki Haley has said. When an administration official said that Haley had gotten confused, she responded in a statement and she said, quote, "With all due respect, I don't get confused." So, Michelle, let's start with you. What are you watching about this interaction among administration officials?
Well, first of all, I am so proud of Nikki Haley for standing up for herself and saying that she does not get confused. She is a very smart, articulate woman. I have been a long fan of hers. I wish she would have ran for president last time around. I think she would have beaten Hillary Clinton. So I certainly hope she takes another shot at that in the future. I am thankful that she stands strong as part of the administration. I think she has a good head on her shoulders. And obviously we've learned that she was informed that this administration would use sanctions against Russia. And that's what she was told before she went on the Sunday shows. And obviously then the administration changed their mind. And I am very glad that Larry Kudlow came out and apologized to her for saying that she might have been confused, because obviously she was not. So I'm glad to have her there. People have suggested that maybe she should resign, you know, for her integrity. No. We need a level-headed, smart woman as part of this administration. I think she's doing a great job.
Well, Tony, Nikki Haley doesn't mince words either. And what do you make of the mixed messages that went on this week there?
It's very dangerous for the world. I mean, the United States is the most powerful economic and military power probably in history. And so the globe needs to know what the message of the United States is. for Nikki Haley to come out and make a statement about U.S. foreign policy and then to be undercut within a few hours by the President of the United States, what that's telling the world is that anything Nikki Haley says has to be taken with a grain of salt. We don't know if it's the real policy of the United States. So that is very damaging. Quite frankly, I don't know how Nikki Haley can remain in her position at this point. If you're at that level of authority and the President of the United States feels free to undercut you, how can you have any credibility at that point? So it looks like the foreign policy is kind of in disarray, and Haley is basically out there. I think a rumor broke this week. Michelle talked about she'd wish that Haley had run for president. Apparently, that is one of President Trump's concerns, that Haley might take him on in 2020. I actually think that would be good for the Republican Party to have a serious challenger to Donald Trump in 2020. And while I do not agree with Nikki Haley on most issues, I do agree with Michelle that Nikki Haley is very competent, very assertive, and would actually make a very good challenger to the president.
Well, meanwhile, Michelle, sanctions kind of hang in the balance here. So critics say the president's decision not to impose sanctions affects American authority on the international level. So what do you make here? Officials said new sanctions could still be imposed if Russia takes further action.
Well, I think they've known that sanctions are on the table. We have wanted to hold a hard line against Syria. Thank goodness the president actually did that when Assad, used chemical weapons against his own people. So, I'm glad that the president is speaking loudly. I am glad that we're talking about the possibility of sanctions. And people obviously know that this president is willing to act when someone crosses that line. He is willing to do something about it. This sounds very crazy, but maybe it's not so bad that the entire world doesn't always know what the United States is up to. I think it's putting other world leaders on edge, and I know that that doesn't make anybody comfortable, and it might always not be the right thing to do, but right now, in this crazy world that we're living in, maybe it's not that bad that the rest of the world doesn't always know what the United States is going to do until they actually talk to our president, which actually we hope is going to be happening between North Korea and the United States soon.
Well, we learned yesterday that North Korea isn't asking for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from the Korean Peninsula as a precondition for abandoning its nuclear weapons. If this holds true, it would seem to remove a major sticking point to a potential nuclear disarmament deal. It's just one of many discussion points in this mix on Week in Review with our roundtable guests, Tony Palmieri, a professor of communication studies at UW Oshkosh, and Michelle Litchens here as well, small business owner from Burlington, former Republican state representative. Getting your insights as well, 800-642-1234. Should U.S. leaders talk with North Korea? Are you okay if it happens in secret, or should they be more open about their plans? And closer to home, what do you remember about Bell Phillips? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll be back in two shakes here on the Ideas Network. Week in Review has arrived. It's a Friday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Yesterday, Mike Pompeo came close to securing confirmation as the U.S.'s 70th Secretary of State when North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp announced her support. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee, though, will vote on Pompeo's nomination Monday. Here's President Trump's boost.
I think Mike Pompeo is extraordinary. He was number one at West Point. He was top at Harvard. He's a great gentleman. I think he'll go down as truly a great Secretary of State.
You can weigh in on Pompeo at 800-642-1234. How should the revelation that the CIA director and Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un to be interpreted? Call in and other developments on your mind, 800-642-1234. Michelle Litchens is here, as well as Tony Palmieri. Let's dive into the North Korean issue here. So Kim Jong-un's is no longer demanding that American troops be removed as this condition for denuclearization of the country. North Korea has long demanded the withdrawal of more than 28,000 U.S. troops in South Korea. And so, meanwhile, there's this planned summit between Trump and Kim Jong-un forthcoming. But while the president is hopeful that the summit will go well, he has a plan if it doesn't.
If I think that it's a meeting that is not going to be fruitful, we're not going to go. If the meeting when I'm there is not fruitful, I will respectfully leave the meeting.
Okay, so Tony, meeting, upcoming, pre-meeting, Pompeo, what do you make of all this with North Korea?
I find the president's remarks, you know, kind of amusing. Our president is supposed to be one of the greatest deal makers in the history of the world, which I think a great deal maker is someone who, if a conversation is not going well, they find a way through various persuasive means to get it going in their direction. But our president apparently is just going to walk out the moment things don't go his way. So it's really hard to read this, because it seems to me if you really were interested in negotiating diplomatically, you probably would have kept Rex Tillerson in as Secretary of State. I mean, just less than a year ago, the president told Rex Tillerson not to waste his time in opening up dialogue with North Korea. But now, all of a sudden, he's very open to this dialogue, and he wants, as his Secretary of State, the diplomatic position, Mr. Pompeo, who's very widely known as a hawk on foreign policy issues. So as with most else in the administration, it seems like there is confusion and chaos. It's not really clear yet what the end game is with North Korea. And while it does look like Mr. Pompeo will probably be confirmed, my prediction is that, as with most other cabinet officials, he'll probably end up with a very rocky relationship with the president. And will we see anything fruitful happen with North Korea? I mean, I'm going to predict no, but of course you always have to hope for the best.
Well, Michelle, are you seeing anything fruitful here with North Korea? How much stock do you put in a meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un?
Actually, I put a lot of stock in it. I mean, we haven't met with North Korea previously. This is very exciting. You know, also to hear that they put a phone line in, I heard on the news this morning, between South Korea and North Korea, that is an incredible step towards the denuclearization of that area and hopefully demilitarization of that area someday in the future. I think that Trump did the right thing by saying, hey, if this isn't going in the right direction, I'm going to respectfully leave. We need to let the rest of the world know now that the United States is back in a leadership position. Again, we might not have the perfect person at the microphone, but at least he's willing to stand up. He's willing to say what's right. He's willing to hold China's feet to the fire to make sure that they are not further enabling North Korea. And President Trump has done that. For all of his shortcomings, he has actually moved the needle in that area of the world for the better. And so I am actually hopeful that maybe we could have some positive things come out of this meeting. I think they're looking at June, so we're not going to know exactly what's going to become of it for a while, but I'm actually quite hopeful.
Well, let's layer in Mike Pompeo and this secret trip to this conversation here. Senator Rand Paul has said he will vote against Pompeo, citing Pompeo's support of the Iraq war, but the president thinks he'll come through. Here's President Trump.
Rand Paul is a very special guy, as far as I'm concerned. He's never let me down, and I don't think he'll let us down again.
Okay, so Michelle, I want to start, or actually, Tony, let's start with you here on Pompeo and this confirmation process. What are you watching for? What are you seeing here?
The Secretary of State is a position of diplomacy. It's generally not the place where you put your most ardent hawks And, you know, Pompeo is a well-known hawk, and he wants, you know, generally force as the first option rather than the last. He doesn't strike me as the kind of person that you would put in that position, especially if President Trump is planning on following through on his campaign promises, in which he suggested he wanted to remove the United States from foreign entanglements. I think that President Trump, or candidate Trump, in 2016 got lots of support from people who thought that the U.S. was overextended globally. So to now put in office someone who really approved of the Iraq War and other interventions doesn't seem to make sense with what he campaigned on in 2016.
Well, Michelle, what do you see looking like the future of Pompeo's prospects for confirmation? You just heard that Rand Paul clip there.
Right. I still think that he will be confirmed. I think we'll find enough red state Democrats that are running for reelection that he will be confirmed. I think Rand Paul will either have to vote for him or make sure that he has another Democrat crossing over to vote for confirmation. And as far as the hawk part of it and wanting to go out there and, you know, take on other countries, obviously our Secretary of State is not going to do anything without permission from the president. If the president doesn't want to move forward on something, the Secretary of State is obviously not going to be able to say we're doing something one way or another because he has no teeth behind him. So that would be just ridiculous. Just because someone believes strongly one way when they're an elected official doesn't necessarily they're going to articulate that when they are appointed in a position to represent the president. So I think he's a very smart individual, and I do think that he is ultimately going to be confirmed.
Michelle Litchens is here, small business owner from Burlington, former Republican state representative. Tony Palmieri in the mix as well, UW Oshkosh Communication Studies professor. It is Week in Review. You can join the roundtable at 800-642-1234. Val Phillips died this week. What do you remember about her? How does her service to Wisconsin change the way you think about your own contributions in the state? Will you benefit from the $100 child tax credit? Do you think it's a smart economic move? What do you make about the UW metrics in terms of performance tied with dollars? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's move on closer to home here with Val Phillips, a civil rights pioneer, passed away this week, Tuesday, age 94. Her life, a series of firsts as she broke gender and racial barriers. First woman and African American elected to Milwaukee's Common Council, first female judge in Milwaukee County, first African American, first female to be elected to a statewide office. Here she is describing fair housing legislation that she introduced to the Milwaukee Common Council four times over the course of 6 years.
In the terms of my commando friends, these cats are just too dumb, to know when they have something going for them. It's bad enough to have to deal with a bigot, but when you got a dumb bigot.
Strong words there. Tony, what do you think leaders today can learn from Val Phillips?
Well, she certainly was someone who was persistent, and you take the fair housing laws that was mentioned. I mean, for many years on the Milwaukee Common Council, she would be the lone vote supporting that, and she refused to give in, and then finally the council saw it her way. So I think she's a really good example of how you, when you believe passionately in something that is right and just and fair, you just can't give up when you get a no vote the first time. So it's the power of persistence. And, I'd like to see that characteristic in more of our elected officials, especially those who call themselves, progressives.
Michelle Litchens, what do you make of her legacy?
I think Tony said exactly what I've written down, the power of persistence. And how challenging to be her. Not only are you the only woman in the room, but you're the only Black woman in the room. I cannot imagine the courage that she needed just to get out of bed in the morning some days to do what she needed to do and to protest as she did and to work for what she believed to be right, to make a difference in her community. I mean, just what an incredible woman, and someone that, you know, more of our kids should actually learn about in school and should try to emulate, especially in the Milwaukee area today. We need more leaders like that. So just a truly impressive woman.
Well, there was just a deluge of condolences that came in after her death. And Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett tweeted, quote, Vel Phillips was a relentless fighter for civil rights in Milwaukee. She marched for fair housing as a young adult, and she dedicated her life to improving our city, both as an alderwoman and judge. Though she is no longer with us, we must continue the work she started. Tony, what work can be carried on here?
It's interesting to hear Tom Barrett say that because, you know, one of the frustrations has been that while the Republican Party moved farther and farther to the right, the Democratic Party in the 90s, well, obviously it did not move as far right as the Republicans, except on, like, you know, Fox News fantasies. The Democratic Party did not fight as forcefully for the kinds of things that Vel Phillips believed in. And I think we saw that in Wisconsin in 2016 when, you know, Bernie Sanders won the Democratic primary, that there is this hunger at the grassroots level to really continue the fight for the kinds of things that Vel Phillips believed in, more grassroots leadership, be more assertive on things like reducing inequality and, you know, many issues of that nature, increasing the minimum wage and what have you. So, I mean, I do think that the Democratic Party, in a very real sense, moved away from people like Vel Phillips. And I think now we're maybe coming back. I mean, if you look at many of the candidates running for governor on the Democratic side, they are sounding themes that sound very close to what Vel Phillips was saying in her heyday. And I think that's a good sign.
Michelle, do you see a Vel Phillips spirit in today's Wisconsin politics?
Not necessarily. You know, on at least on the Republican side, well, we've done so much in the state. So many of the things that at least I ran when I ran for office, they were on my ticket to do. So I think maybe, you know, we've passed right to work. You know, we've lowered taxes in the state. We've passed a voter ID requirement. There are so many things that I wanted to do. It just means that you're just maybe not as excited to go down there and fight as hard, but it still means that, at least on the Republican side, that people still want to keep going in the same direction. But I wish we had leaders in the city of Milwaukee that were working hard every day to make sure that kids were actually going to school and graduating from school. You know, people outside of the state can't go into Milwaukee and encourage kids to go to school. That needs to be their community. So we need more leaders to rise up from the city of Milwaukee to say, we want our children to be successful. We don't want them pregnant at 13 and 14 and 15 years old, and we don't want them destined for a life of poverty. So I would really like to see more leaders in the city of Milwaukee stand up and do that.
Well, a quick aside here, Mayor Tom Barrett made headlines this week when he told reporters that he's considering stepping into the race for governor. If he enters the crowded field, it would be his fourth run for the office. Michelle, what do you make of that news?
Well, my first instinct was, oh my goodness, there's 14 people in there and Tom Barrett doesn't like any of them. He doesn't think any of them really have a chance to win, so he's considering running himself. I know that he's talked with some folks and he's shared that he has some pretty good numbers, but even his numbers don't match what the generic Democrat reaches on the ballot against Scott Walker. So I don't necessarily think it's a good idea for him to jump in, but I just think it's interesting that with the vast number of candidates that the Democrats have to choose from, that even Tom Barrett thinks that there might not be the perfect candidate out there yet.
Tony, are there legs to Barrett in moving into this race? And are you concerned about the size of the field?
I think there are a lot of great candidates running for governor on the Democratic side. And I don't think that Tom Barrett's presence in there would add anything new or significant. I mean, I personally would urge him not to run. I think a better thing for him to do would be find a candidate in that large group that he really likes and maybe come out and endorse them early. I do predict that by June or so, you know, when the nomination signatures are due, whenever they're due, that we're going to see that the field will gradually get smaller. But let's face it, Mayor Barrett has lost against Scott Walker, I believe, three times?
Three. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, three times. And while that is not disqualifying, I really think the Democrats need a fresh face to run against Governor Walker at this point.
We're breaking down the week's top stories with Tony Palmieri, professor of communication studies at UW Oshkosh. Michelle Litchens here, small business owner from Burlington and a former Republican state representative. You in the mix as well at 800-642-1234. The state Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday on a case asking whether Marquette University had the right to discipline a tenured professor for something he wrote on his personal blog. What do you think of this case? 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're in the thick of Week in Review. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Hearing perspectives this week from Tony Palmieri, professor of communication studies at UW Oshkosh, Michelle Litchens, small business owner from Burlington, former Republican state representative, getting your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Are you watching that state Supreme Court hearing on this Marquette case? Did Marquette have the right to discipline a tenured political science professor for something he wrote online, resulting in threats against another instructor? Let's talk about it. Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Are professors at private schools entitled to the same free speech protections as those at public schools? We'll get to that in just a moment. Well, let's now turn to the UW budget. Lawmakers approved a new funding formula for schools in the UW system on a party line vote. Specifically, the 2017 to 2019 budget created a performance-based funding category for system schools and set aside $26 million to be awarded starting this year. And the formula comes from the Board of Regents, suggests using several three-year averages to create baselines. So we got metrics going on here. Supporters say it's used in many other states, sets clear expectations from policymakers. Michelle, what do you think of this formula?
Well, I think the idea is a good idea. We already use it for our technical colleges in Wisconsin. 32 states across the country and others are considering having some sort of performance-based funding. I think we have to start looking at our universities. We don't have a bottomless pit of cash anymore. That's just the reality. And so we need to make sure that when our students take out $50,000, $60,000 in loans for an education, that they're actually going to be able to find employment when they're done, that they're going to be able to graduate in 4 years, that they're going to be able to get the classes that they would like to get. So I think the premise for this is a great idea. I think they're going to have to work out the specifics over the next couple years and what's going to work right in the state of Wisconsin to make sure that we don't lose or disenfranchise any particular students or try to discount any students. But I think the idea in general is a really good idea, especially when you're dealing with limited funds in the future.
Well, Mark in Appleton has been waiting quite a while to talk about this. Mark, go ahead. You're on.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I think it's ironic that Michelle mentions about getting the classes you want when the legislature keeps cutting the UW budget so massively and putting a tuition freeze that was not funded. Now we've seen the destruction of UW colleges, which was the access point and had lower tuition, and we don't know what's going to happen to tuition there. But I just have to say it's ironic the legislature is adding all of this more, adding control, while they keep cutting the budget. And people really should know that you're hearing that enrollments are going down, so therefore that's why Stevens Point and Superior are being destroyed. And in fact, it's not because of enrollment. It's because of the lack of funding. State funding has been cut massively, and you have it tied to a tuition freeze. And so UW is, and this pain is coming to UW Oshkosh in the very near future, as Mr. Palmieri knows.
And let's bring in Tony Palmieri about this performance-based funding category. What do you make of this move?
Well, thank you to the caller, Mark. I agree with 100% of what he said. You know, a few years ago, the governor got caught trying to change the mission of the UW, take out Search for the Truth, and, you know, replace it with meeting the state's workforce needs, or however they phrased it. And they got caught. They kept the original language in the mission, but they've been governing according to the revised mission. I think it's really, really unfortunate. You know, Michelle Litchens, who was one of my better students, by the way, 20 years ago.
I know.
I think Michelle got the kind of education that really is needed today. We have so many alumni come back to UW Oshkosh who talk about that the job they have today did not exist 20 years ago. And the best kind of education for that is a traditional university of education where you learn critical thinking, which teaches you how to adapt to change. That is really what we need. And as Mark said, we've spent so much time cutting budgets and freezing tuition for so many years at a time that we've now really harmed our mission. It's unfortunate because we're living in a time period where the kind of general university liberal arts education is the strongest, and yet we're choosing that moment when it is most valuable to make it more difficult to get that education.
Well, let me ask it this way, Tony. Will tying dollars to performance make any difference at the end of the day?
You know, it remains to be seen exactly what campuses have to do to be eligible for this funding. But as a general rule, when state government tries to micromanage university performance, it's not going to end well. You know, you bring in the politics, and I just don't see it ending well. We need a complete rethinking of what we want for the UW. And by the way, I think that's why the elections of 2018 are going to be so, so crucial. I do hope that whatever Democrat runs against Scott Walker this year really puts the UW issues at least near the top of their agenda. We need a real debate on what's going on here.
Michelle, you get the last word here. Will this, these metrics, tying performance with funding, will that make an impact?
You know, I do believe that we need a liberal education. We need to explore, you know, every different area, not just the one where you're going to have a job. I completely support that premise. But I also believe our university systems need to become a little bit leaner. I don't think every university needs to have an English major or a philosophy major. I think we just need to focus more and use our dollars more wisely. And so with this possibility of performance funding, maybe that would encourage certain dollars to be available at a school that weren't available before because we're kind of shifting our resources to different schools and consolidating a little bit. I certainly don't want to take away, you know, that liberal arts from any school, but I do want to use the dollars that we have as wisely as possible. And just for an example, up in the Fox Valley with NINA school now takes 4% of their spending, and they use 2% each year for salary increases for their teachers, and they use 2% to give bonuses to outstanding instructors in their school district. So that is something that I think we should encourage to happen around the state in our education system.
Well, also this week, we saw Marathon County becoming the first in Wisconsin to pass a regulatory ordinance on sulfide mining. Following the repeal of the state's mining moratorium law late last year, counties have until July 1st to enact local regulations before gold and copper mining in the state becomes easier to initiate. And the mining company Aquila Resources has conducted exploratory drilling on a gold deposit near the Eau Claire Dells in the county, but has said there are no immediate intentions of opening a mine there. So, Tony, what do you think of this move by Marathon County?
What's interesting is that it is citizens at the grassroots level who are concerned about pollution issues, especially pollution of water. I think we're seeing opposition to mining because people are concerned about their livelihood. and their homes. And so, you know, I think it's good what Marathon County did. They probably could have gone further in trying to deter mining. You know, and I anticipate other counties affected by potential pollution issues will follow suit with what Marathon County did.
Michelle?
Yeah, I think what Marathon County did is great. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. You know, the state kind of opened up the idea of mining again, but then gave local governments the authority and ability to make some restrictions. So I think they did a great job. I always do think it's interesting that you have some extreme environmentalists, you know, saying that we can't have any mining. Well, everyone wants a cell phone. Everyone wants a computer. All of our electronics have gold and or copper in all of them. And if you want to have a cell phone, the gold's going to come from somewhere. And so do you want it to come from a highly regulated mining industry in the United States? Or do you want it to come from some third world country where no one's regulating anything and you know that the water and the air is being seriously polluted there? So I think it's just something we need to think about, because we all want phones, computers, and all of the electronic gadgets that we can get our hands on, but somebody needs to mine for the metals that we use in those electronic devices. And so I just think we want those to be mined in a responsible way and not to send everything to third world countries where we know, you know, those people are having to drink that water without any regulation.
Well, very quickly here, the state Supreme Court heard oral arguments yesterday on this case asking whether Marquette University had the right to discipline a tenured professor for something he wrote on his personal blog. That political science professor, John McAdams, called out a graduate student instructor. So, Tony, what do you make of this case before the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
You know, I'm a huge supporter of free speech. I don't think this is a free speech issue, though. I mean, this looks to be, as Marquette is saying, really an employment issue. You know, you can't have your senior faculty members using their blog to essentially bully graduate student teachers in a classroom by sending out, you know, trolls that send them threatening email messages. I think Professor McAdams has every right to maintain his blog, but you don't have a right to use it to launch an attack against a graduate student teacher. He probably, if he had to do it over again, could do the same blog post without mentioning a teacher's name. But given the conservative nature of this current Supreme Court, I would not be surprised if it goes in his direction. But again, I don't really see this as a free speech issue as much as a workplace bullying kind of issue.
And Michelle, you're going to have the final word on this. What do you make of this case?
This was not about bullying. So he put her contact information in his blog. He did not instruct people to go out there and give her death threats because she said that a student couldn't voice his opinion on campus. I think that if he loses this case, this is sending a loud message to every conservative student, every non-groupthink student out there in the state that attends a private institution, that you no longer can voice your opinion because they don't want to hear it if you don't belong to the groupthink that they're instructing on campus. So this is kind of scary when it comes to free speech, and I certainly hope that McAdams wins his job back.
Well, Tony and Michelle, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tony Palmieri is a communication studies professor at UW Oshkosh. Michelle Litchens is a small business owner from Burlington and a former Republican state representative. This edition of Week in Review was produced by Brianne Shasso, Keely Baltina, and executive producer Michelle Johnson. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network. Have a great weekend. We'll meet you back here Monday.